meeting will come to order at 1:40 p.m. in the Belts Room 105. Today is Friday, January 20th, 2023. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Bishop, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar is excused, and myself, Chair Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please turn off your cell phones. Joining us today are LAO moderators Doug Bridges and Zach Lawhorn, along with our recording secretary, Juliana Singh. Welcome, everyone. One goal for the Labor and Commerce Committee this year is to focus on Alaska's workforce and opportunities in our communities to move our economy forward toward a prosperous future. Our workforce changed dramatically over the past few years, and entire industries are struggling to find employees. Our economy is best served when Alaska's leaders clear pathways to success for business and workers. We must provide opportunities for workers and entrepreneurs to access information and gain essential skills, tools, and abilities that are required for them to go out and win in the marketplace. Over the course of the next few weeks, we'll be hearing from various state agencies, educators, trade organizations, and representatives to some of the key industries here in Alaska. They're being asked to speak to problems they are facing in hiring qualified workers, the impacts to these problems on their businesses, and to all Alaskans. Finally, we are asking industries, groups, and agencies to propose solutions that help to solve workforce challenges. The legislature can pass bills, but if the bills aren't tailored to real problems out there in the real world, we aren't helping. In fact, it is likely that we may be making things worse. On the agenda today, we will hear overviews from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. First up, you'll hear from Commissioner Tamika Ledbetter from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Commissioner, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Chairman Bjorkman.
Welcome, Commissioner. Could you please state your name for the record?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Dr. Tamika Ledbetter, Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Very good. Would you like it if we ask questions throughout your presentation or just wait till the end?
It would be good if you could wait till the end.
Absolutely.
I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Very good.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Chairman Bjorkman and Vice Chair Bishop, and members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. Thank you so much for this opportunity to not only provide an overview of our department, but just to help you to understand some of the work that has already been done and the way forward as we look toward the future. I always like to start every presentation with acknowledging my team. And so joining me here in the room today are Deputy Commissioner Kathy Munoz, Division Director of Employment and Training Services, Patsy Westcott, Administrative Services Director, Dan DiBartolo, Workers' Compensation Director, Chuck Collins. Also on the line with us is AvTech Director, Kathy LeCompte. And on a personal note, the MVP on my personal team is my husband, Fred Ledbetter, for whom on February 14th, we will have been married 25 years. So I'm excited to have all of them here with me today. I have the privilege of leading a group of professionals who are dedicated and who are committed to workforce development for the state of Alaska. And it really is an honor to be here and also an honor to lead a department such dedicated professionals and to have dedicated much of my life to this very department. Just to share a bit of my background, I have served in this department since 2007. It's been over 16 years now. I started my career in job development. I served as a case manager administering job training funding under, at that time, it was the Workforce Investment Act. I have served as a local job center manager at the Matsu Job Center in Wasilla for 8 years. I was then promoted to regional manager of the Anchorage Economic Region, and which facilitated services to all of the job centers in the central region. And now I have the privilege of serving as commissioner. It's an interesting background. It's a rich background. And for that very reason, my peers across the nation elected me to serve as the board chair for the National Association of State Workforce Agencies. And in addition to that, I have the privilege of having been appointed by the Secretary of Labor, Martin J. Walsh, to serve on his council. It's a 14-member advisory council for the Workforce Information Advisory Council. And so I start with my background because it has been my vision prior to this point, and especially now, to really raise the awareness of the state workforce and to also help people to understand all of the resources that are available, not only within our department, but across the state. If you'll pay close attention to this map, I really enjoy this map because it shows the reach, the broad reach of our department throughout the state. It includes locations of services, particularly with our 14 job centers, also the services that we administer within our department and the different divisions that are providing those services. And as you can see, our reach covers from Ketchikan to Utsiavik. We have Alaska Vocational Technical Center, which is AvTech in Seward. We also provide funding to the 8 regional TVET recipients. There are 27 STEP grantees. There are 8 construction academies. And there are many private training providers as well that we are partnering with. So our reach is large and it's strong. And I believe we have a lot of ground that we're covering. And of course, we have work to do, but the apparatus for strong training programs are in effect, and we are covering the entire state. If we'll look at the next few slides, this will be what our research and analysis unit is doing within our department. Research and analysis is the section within our department that maintains up-to-date data. They look at information of labor market trends. They're looking at industry-specific tracking. They're looking at data to point to trends in our economy. This particular slide is a look back from 2015 to August of 2021, which is showing the trends regarding job availabilities. You may see information like on slide 5 that deals with population data, as they are working closely with the U.S. Census Bureau on population estimates across our state and projections. If you look at slide 6, you'll also see something that's recognizable. Many of you already receive a hard copy of the trends, and if you don't, we will make sure that you get one. And we always ask that you'll encourage your constituents to subscribe online because this magazine offers a wide range of economic topics, and it's searchable online, and it goes back as far as 1978. So there has been a lot of data that has been produced from that time until now. Next slide. This slide helps me to outline what our funding looks like, particularly as it relates to workforce development and job training programs. But I need to make a note of clarification. The Alaska Workforce Investment Board, the 26-member board that's appointed by the governor, that board represents public and private educational providers. It represents industry. It represents labor entities. Those members meet quarterly. They make recommendations on how best to deploy funding and in support of training our workforce. The point of this slide is to demonstrate and to showcase that our department is very experienced with administration of federal and state funds. We've been doing it for a long time, and we've made a lot of investments in ensuring that those dollars are spent in a manner that's fidelis with the programs that we administer. The AWIB, or the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, as it relates to the division within the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, This unit provides the governance for the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, otherwise known as WIOA, the funding associated with it, and it's a requirement in federal legislation, which was passed in 2014. The AWIB also oversees other federal and state grant funds, and it's illustrated in this chart. I'd like to draw your attention particularly to the distribution of TVEP, $13.5 million, and also you can see how we administer WIOA funds, specifically adult, dislocated worker. WIOA youth is not reflected here, but we also administer funds for services provided directly to youth. But I also want to point your attention to the $7.4 million that we received in last year's budget. This was a multi-year appropriation. $1 million was utilized for workforce training toward individuals. Those individuals get to select what type of training they're interested in, and they tell us what it is they want to do, and we encourage them to utilize the labor market information to make an informed choice. $1.8 million went directly to the construction academies, which is very popular across the state, and $4.6 million was put forward through the competitive process. Again, this is a multi-year appropriation, and so we're looking forward to continuing to partner with these 27 or more as we encourage more training providers to come online. Next slide. So the average individual in the state of Alaska will interface with our department probably through the job centers. Someone comes to Alaska, or they're in Alaska and they're looking for work. They go to the State of Alaska webpage, they find our department, and voila, here it is. They look for ways to query the jobs that are available, and also business owners and businesses can look for a candidate within that labor exchange system. The point of this slide, though, is not to focus solely on the online mechanism for which we use to help people find work, but to let individuals know that we have staff who are in offices ready to receive customers and to help them find jobs. How do they do that? Well, they help individuals with resumes. They help them with interviewing skills. They help them with cover letters. They help them with workshops like how to apply for State of Alaska jobs. And the list goes on and on. We have certain targeted populations that we are looking to work with. Veterans, people who are transitioning from the military, people who are coming out of incarceration, youth, folks who are adult basic ed deficient, again, and the list goes on and on. Our department touches almost everyone in one way or the other. Next slide. And if we can hop to the next one as well. Thank you. But one way that I think really highlighted our department was during the pandemic. And everyone was talking about what? Unemployment insurance. And so what I'd like to say about unemployment insurance, it is not an entitlement program. In fact, it's a temporary partial wage replacement for eligible workers. It's essentially funding that is utilized to put food on the table, you know, buy milk and bread and cheese and put gas in the car while individuals are looking for work. It's a way to stabilize the economy for a local area during times of economic downturn. And as we all saw throughout the pandemic, there was a lot of weight put on our trust fund during that time because we had a lot of claimants at that time. But it's wonderful that I can report that as of today, there are only 5,077 individuals currently receiving unemployment insurance. That is significantly lower than where we were during the height of the pandemic. Also, it's wonderful to note that the solvency of our UI funding, our trust fund, is really healthy, and it is solvent. And the department is projecting a decrease in the employer tax. So we have a few things to celebrate. And I am very thankful to Division Director Patsy Westcott and our unemployment insurance team during that time because they ensured through their efforts that our UI trust fund remained intact and they maintain the integrity of the program. So AvTech. AvTech used to be the best kept secret, and we are trying our best to make AvTech a household name. There are so many wonderful things going on down in Seward with AvTech. And what I'd like to say, I know that, Chair, you have scheduled a presentation by Director LeComp and AvTech, and so she's going to give you a lot of specifics, but a few highlights about AvTech. It is nationally recognized. Their motto is a career in under a year. In 2019, Georgetown University named AvTech one of the best returns on investment. That's a huge success for our state. They, out of 4,000 post-secondary institutions, AvTech was ranked 43 in the nation in that category. We are proud partners through AvTech with the university. They are providing high-quality maritime education. That education is recognized by the U.S. Department of Transportation as a maritime center for training excellence, and we're continuing to work closely designing training opportunities with employers. AvTech is also becoming more portable, so they're sending instructors to different parts of our state. So we're doing our best to cover all bases to ensure that all Alaskans have opportunities for training who want them. I personally would like to invite all of you down to AvTech. I would love to host you there and give you an opportunity to have a meal prepared by our culinary arts students, who are some of the best students there are. Next slide. Vocational rehabilitation. This is another division that many people are not as aware of, and we're doing a better job of promoting the services that are administered by our staff there at vocational rehabilitation. Essentially, their role is to assist individuals with disabilities to obtain and to maintain employment. One of the things that we realized throughout the pandemic is during that time, individuals with disabilities had an increase in job opportunities. Telework really particularly helped to expand those opportunities. And because of the advancements of technologies for the visually and hearing impaired and motor skill impaired, there are new doors being open and opportunities for these individuals. Within this division, there are several components. One component is our Disabilities Determination Services Program. They work directly with individuals who are receiving Social Security disability. We also have what has been highlighted in the new proposed budget, and I'm very thankful to the governor that he included funding for this innovation idea. But the Business Enterprises Program essentially is a program that helps individuals who experience blindness or other disabilities, severe disabilities, and it helps them to establish businesses, particularly in food services or gift shops or vending machines. But there are other opportunities. We found out during the pandemic also that the entrepreneurial spirit is alive and well. And so this is a wonderful opportunity for us to partner in a way with these individuals to help them with business opportunities that may also serve the community. One in particular will be the partnership between a business owner with a disability and a child care services facility that will be set up within the Mat-Su Regional Hospital in Wasilla. So we're looking forward to that innovative partnership. Next slide. Our Division of Labor Standards and Safety. This division houses four components. Those components are occupational safety and health, mechanical inspection, wage and hour, and the Alaska Safety Advisory Council. In Alaska, we have our own state plan. It's one of 26 states operating its own state plan under the umbrella of federal OSHA. But a highlight of this is our consultation services. That's a part of this section or unit. Those services are free. They're confidential to employers. And we're finding that more employers are taking advantage of these services, which is helping us to ensure that we're providing for a safe working environment for our workers. The Alaska Labor Relations Agency is a very small unit within our department, but they are mighty. Essentially, they oversee the elections of labor representation. They also review representation petitions for public sector entities. And so this is a three-person team, and they're doing quite a lot of work, and they're doing a great job at it. And the next slide. Workers' compensation. Workers' compensation is the division that's responsible to support injured workers. I do want to highlight one section that we are looking at prioritizing and helping to support a little bit more, and that's the reemployment services within workers' compensation. Just because someone has been injured on the job doesn't mean that they want to be out of work indefinitely. And so for those that are looking at getting back into work, we want to connect them to that employment opportunity more quickly if that supports their desire. And this last slide, I believe perhaps, Mr. Chair, you recognize someone in the picture. Senator Bishop was once a commissioner of the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I am very happy about his support and appreciate his support of our department and his advocacy. But in this picture, we were in Fairbanks. We did a tour at that time of the Pipeline Training Center. We had the opportunity to see firsthand a program providing state-of-the-art training that prepares Alaskans for jobs in Alaska's oil and gas sector. This is just one example of what we've been doing, how we've gone around the state, and we see state-of-the-art programs. We see lots of activity happening, and there are many opportunities for Alaskans currently in this state, and I'm looking forward to continuing to work with training providers to ensure that Alaskans are made aware of these opportunities. This is my last slide, but before I close, I wanted to just share a little bit of a personal note. In 2003, we moved to Alaska by way of the Air Force. I wanted to go someplace warm. I updated my dream sheet, and the Air Force saw fit to station me at Elmendorf Air Force Base, Alaska. But that decision that was made for me changed our lives. Our small family drove up to Alaska from Florida. We cheated. We got on the ferry the last leg of the way from Bellingham, Washington, and drove down from Haines. But in 2005, I decided to separate from the Air Force. And in my briefing, the transition briefing, someone mentioned in passing about checking in with the local employment service. I believe that's what they were calling it at that time. It was something that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me because prior to that point, I had never been in an employment services center. And so 11 months after I separated from the Air Force, I thought about that. Hey, somebody told me to go to the employment services center. And I contacted the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. It was at that time that I was told that I was eligible for unemployment insurance. I didn't know what that was really at that time. And then I was invited to schedule an appointment and show up. And that is what I did. I walked into the local job center. I stopped at the front desk to sign in. I checked the little sheet that they had me check. Are you a veteran? Yes or no? I checked yes. It was at that time that the front desk person said, "You're a veteran, you're eligible for priority of services." I didn't know what priority of services was, but what it looked to me was that I get to skip to the front of the line. They took so much care of me. It was just wonderful how I was able to meet with a DVOP, a Disabled Veterans Opportunity Program person. That individual helped me identify the skills that I had. They helped me update my resume. They helped me change military jargon to something that people would understand. They helped me beef up my interviewing skills, but they did something else. They actually queried the jobs that were available in my local area. And they said to me, that particular vet rep said, I think you would be great at this particular job, and I think you should apply. And I applied for that job, and from that day forward, my life changed for the better. I had no idea that many years ago that I would be sitting here in front of you talking about the services that we offer. But I will tell you, I am an example of workforce development. I'm an example of why these services are important. I'm an example of why this funding is important and why it's necessary for us to reach out to these targeted populations. Long gone the days when people will just show up at our office. We have to go and find them. And that's what we're doing in our department. And so I thank you for allowing me to present to you. I thank you for your interest when we met the other day and how excited you are about workforce development. And we're looking forward to being invited to the conversation. We have a lot to offer. We have a lot of capacity, but we need to maximize what we're doing and help to convene others to the table so that we can take this challenge and solve these problems together. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate your testimony. Do any of the members have a question for Commissioner Ledbetter? Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Ledbetter, for this wonderful presentation. I've got to ask you a question. I probably should already know the answer, but I don't. Can you tell me a little bit more about the AFTEC program and how it works?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, AFTEC is a wonderful opportunity for young people or anyone to go and get job skills that are for today. AFTEC is nimble. It operates on a clock hour. It mimics the workday. And so this training is good for individuals who want to go right from a training program into employment. And we have a high rate of placement after individuals graduate from AFTEC. In fact, usually when I go to the AFTEC graduations, most of the young people, most of the students are not even there because they've already gotten jobs before graduation day. And so this program is available. It's open. We have capacity. We're looking for more students. And all we need is to direct individuals to know that there are other opportunities. Some people may never go to a four-year traditional college. Others may want to go directly to work. But AFTEC can be that bolster of upskilling to help individuals prepare for the jobs that exist right now and beyond.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely.
Thank you. So how long is an AFTEC program, and was there a cost involved to the student?
Through the chair, yes, there's a cost. It's a very low cost. It's probably a lot more inexpensive than other programs. And it depends on the program, but we have programs that are 10 months. We have programs that are less. We have some that are a year. It really depends on what the individual wants to do.
Thank you. And one last comment, Mr. Chairman, I would really love the tour, so let's arrange it for me and anybody else who's interested. Thank you.
Through the chair, I think September would be a great time, Workforce Development Month.
Works for me. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely. Are there other questions for the commissioner? Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, thank you for being here today. I had a question regarding some workforce development funds that were vetoed from last year's budget. Did you have a conversation with the administration before that veto happened?
Through the chair. What we did was whatever funds were allocated to us, we just work within the funding. We're used to, in our department, most of our department's funding is federally funded, so we're used to being supported by grant funds, and so whatever the allocation is, whatever the appropriation is, we just work within that.
Thank you.
I've got three questions.
Senator Bishop.
Page 9. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. This fidelity bonding, I see it's on here twice. Did we pick up a new fidelity bonding program from when I was there?
Through the chair, no, sir. That's an error.
Okay. Page, and if the chair's permission, could you chart this from 1974 forward? Have your people put us on a chart, on a graph? They've done it in the past. I think it'd be good for the committee to see how well the UI Trust Fund has worked. And it works, and so I'll leave it at that. But you need to, I think it's worth a look back in history for the committee at the with the chair's permission. And if I can just finish, we've talked a lot about ABTEC. Can't say enough good things about it as well. The chair's permission, I'd like to, and Kathy can, if she's listening, can look. When they're come, you're going to have them before us. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Maybe they could bring a 10-year look back on enrollment by discipline to see where we were 10 years ago, where we're at today. So that's all I got. Good job.
Thank you. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. Just one last question regarding, many industries are looking for workers. Are there some industries that are being more affected by the labor shortage than others?
Through the chair, I think we can all agree childcare is the industry that's most impacted. I think there are things that we absolutely must do now in order to facilitate support to that industry. I think we need to certainly professionalize childcare. I think we need to stop calling it daycare. I think we probably should, beef up the wages in that industry. And we need to look at it as if we are not only supporting the current workforce, but we're also training up the future workforce, because those young people, those children who see and experience their parents working, they probably are more inclined to lean into employment as well.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Merrick. Senator Bishop, Senator Gray Jackson, for all of your excellent questions. Commissioner Ledbetter, that leads into some questions I had regarding child care and the ability for workers and employees to find child care. Are there things that the Department of Labor can do to connect folks who are looking for child care to child care providers?
Mr. Chair, yes, we are having those conversations every day, and we're looking at innovative ways to do business. What we're looking at is the first thing we want to do is train up those child care workers to ensure that they have the skill set to be able to handle not only their classroom, but also progress through the ranks. Most of the child care facilities are closing because they don't have that mid-level director person, that administrator. And so we need not only individuals who are the rank and file, so to speak, the teacher in the classroom, but we need someone to hop over into administration. So we're looking at putting together PATH academies. We're looking at strengthening or upskilling those childcare workers. We're looking at partnering with business entities, particularly the Small Business Administration, to help those individuals who have a passion to be a child care worker, to go to that next level and perhaps open a facility. But we also understand that just because someone wants to be in child care and wants to be with children, they also need the competency to be that business owner, which is a whole different skill set. So we're looking at a lot of different ways to help support this industry, and we're working closely with Department of Health to ensure that we have a strong partnership and a collaboration for those efforts.
Very good. And certainly that's something that I've heard from my constituents, the struggle surrounding child care. So if there's anything that the legislature can do to support you in that mission, please let us know.
Thank you.
My next question has to do with the labor standards and safety. And certainly your department oversees a number of things under that umbrella. Are there things that need to be done to ensure that the labor standards and safety of Alaskan workplaces are consistent with laws and regulations?
Mr. Chair, yes. I think consultation is a big area of support in that. I believe that as employers, as business owners understand that that service is available to them, they can contact the consultation section. They can get, someone to go into their facility and take a look around. It's not punitive. It allows them to express that, hey, we need help in this area. And we believe that, you know, people should be able to go to work and be safe in their working environment. And everything we can do to assist in that effort, we're there to do that.
Very good. Thank you. Any final questions for the commissioner? Commissioner Ledbetter, thank you for joining us at Senate Labor and Commerce today.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Take a brief at ease. On the record at 2:18. Next in Senate Labor and Commerce, we have Commissioner Julie Sandy with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Commissioner, could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
My name is Julie Sandy, and I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Very good. Thank you. Do you prefer to have us ask questions as we kind of go through your presentation, or should we hold our questions till the end?
Chair Borkman, if possible, it'd be great if you guys could hold the questions to the end. I've got folks that are in the room, but then also part of my team is online, so that might help us stay a little organized.
Excellent. So we'll hold our questions till the end. Thank you for being here today.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I really do appreciate this and have an opportunity to come and visit with you guys and give you a brief overview of the department. And, you know, since I was here last year, I certainly can say I've learned a lot about the department, which hopefully is a relief for you guys. I was brand new a year ago, and my very first day on the job was the first day of session. So never having spent much time in the Capitol, it was like drinking from a fire hose, but I have an amazing team. So in the room with me, I have Director Rob, Director Lager, Director Anderson, and we've got Victoria Calderoni from our Anchorage office, and she handles some of our special projects. And then we also have Greg Smith, who we're so excited to have as our new Ledge liaison. So that's the team that's in the room. But on the phone, we also have Director Ringheyer, Director Moeller, Thomas Lochner of our broadband group. And then we also have Director Schmidt online. So I have my phone of friend abilities if I'm not able to answer your guys' questions, or if you have specific questions for those individuals. So on the agenda today, I'm going to have just a brief overview, and we structured the presentation a little bit differently, and hopefully that will it'll be easier for you guys to get through the parts I think that you're most interested in, at least right now. Our department presentation changes, it feels like, hourly as things change and our priorities are shifting a bit. But the second thing I'm going to hit on is just roadblocks, and that's sort of over the last year as I've visited with stakeholders, gone out to the communities, met with people, and then worked with the industries. We really very clearly came across the things that were most challenging for small businesses especially, but business in general, and then how we're planning to move forward. And then just, you know, really briefly, my background, for those of you that don't know, I spent many years in healthcare as a state employee for the Pioneer Homes. I grew up in rural Alaska, so I'm passionate about rural Alaska and the folks that live out in those communities. I was really lucky to be able to grow up the way I did in a logging camp off of the road system, but at the same time, I recognize some of the challenges that folks in those communities have. And then I also am a small business owner, so that I've always had that ability to have the private sector experience while also having served in the public sector, so I think that has helped prepare me for this position. But in addition to that, I served on both the ADA and the Alaska Energy Authority boards. And so those, especially on large project finance or larger projects serving Alaska, those helped me sort of prepare for this role. So the next slide is the organization of our department. And, you know, our mission is to promote a healthy economy, strong communities, and to protect consumers in Alaska. And of course, across all of our divisions, folks in our team, I'm so proud of, are working so hard on behalf of Alaskans every day. We have our executive team, our six core divisions, and then our eight corporate agencies. And the reason why I felt like this, it was important to represent it this way for you guys is because it's so important for us to call out the difference between the corporate agencies and the divisions. And, you know, maybe it was because I was new and I needed to learn that myself, but so often I find that folks are lumping those together as if the, or forgetting completely that those corporate agencies live under DCCED. But they're a big part of our team. They're a big part of what we do every day, and we support them, and certainly at times they need support from our executive team as well. And so I want to spend a little bit of time talking about that, but also just, you know, understanding the difference between a corporate agency and a division of the state of Alaska, right? So we have those separate independent corporations of the state of Alaska really need to be able to often react to market changes in a much more nimble way than a division under the state of Alaska could do. And I find that when we lump them together or make assumptions about them operating much more like a core division of the state, I feel like we're not calling out the really important need for those corporate agencies to be more nimble. So that was why I wanted to make sure I called that out, but also presented it that way to you. So the next slide is, you know, how we achieve our mission. And I won't read all of these for you, but I do think it's really important to spend some time just understanding. So under our mission, the healthy economy, strong communities for the state, and protecting consumers. You know, the folks on our team are serving Alaskans every day. And here are some of the programs under our department that do that. So, you know, in terms of a healthy economy, you know, our international trade group, which Victoria spends a lot of time working on, but, you know, 18,000 jobs in Alaska are from foreign-owned companies. And so, whether or not it's something we spend a lot of time focusing on daily or not, the reality is every opportunity we have to be meeting with folks from other countries and promoting Alaskan, especially seafood, ASME does a tremendous job doing that, is really, really important for our state. But in addition to that, we've just got, you know, our small business, our investment team does I'm so proud of the work that they do. They're just like the little engine that could. Oftentimes, they're not the ones that folks call out. You don't see a lot about them in the news, but they're working so hard on behalf of Alaskans, especially during the pandemic. But so some of those revolving loan funds, the microloan program, commercial charter loan, really important. But then also we've got Made in Alaska program, Minerals Commission, financial institution examinations. And so all of those kinds of things are part of what we do to help promote a healthy economy. But then under our strong communities, we're doing so much work right now on our food security task force. We've got our broadband office, which, as you know, last year when I was here, I was just announcing that we were going to be picking the broadband office up, standing it up in under the Department of Commerce, which our team, you know, I'm so grateful for their energy and their willingness to do the right thing for Alaskans, even if it means really having to work a lot harder. And then we've got the RUBA program also is one that we didn't put on the slide, but I think is really important. And then under protecting consumers, you know, our team, especially in the Division of Banking and Securities, just does a remarkable job. And before I became the commissioner, it's not even something I really was aware that we did. And I'm so proud of the work that they're doing, especially on their investigation and enforcement side, trying to protect Alaskans and really get bad players out and referring those up to the Department of Law. So on the next slide, so our executive team, obviously many of you know, Deputy Commissioner Michaela Fowler is a big part of our team, and thank God for her and her leadership. But under our executive team, just so you know how our office is sort of organized, we've got the Alaska Broadband Office with Director Thomas Lochner and his team. Lisa Van Bargen's done a really remarkable job. It's no small feat. We sort of rushed past the fact that we stood up a broadband office, but we did, and they have worked the details and the amount of thought and the coverage of them across the state as they've been really working hard to keep educate folks, but then also collaborate. So the Rasmussen Foundation has been a tremendous partner with us, especially on the digital equity side. And then we've got our Office of International Trade. We have the Legislative Relations, and just as an example, so our team, I just was asking them, you know, how many legislative reports are we producing every year? I know depending on the department, some of them, some departments are only responsible for a few. Our department is producing at least 30 reports that we're required to give you guys every year because of the scope of work that we do across the state of Alaska. We have our economic development side, which I'm going to spend some more time talking about. And then we have our special projects. So under special projects, I mean, that can be anything from, like right now, we're spending a lot of time, like I said, working on the food security task force report. But we also did a lot of work with ARPA funding and getting those funds out to small businesses in Alaska. And then we have our boards and commissions. So the boards that I sit on, that I personally sit on, that I don't delegate, I think are important to call it just so there's an understanding of really all the places I'm trying to be at one time representing the needs of the department, and then also really gaining information and bringing that back, right? So I serve on the ATIA board, the Alaska Energy Authority board, Alaska Railroad, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority board. I also serve on Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and the Royalty Board. I think that's But under that, we also, I must have forgotten, but we also delegate. So the municipal bond banks boards have been delegated. Deputy Commissioner Fowler serves on those for me, among others. So on the next slide, so our Division of Admin Services, and I'm going to just go through these really quickly, but, you know, as you have other departments come in and present to you, I'm sure this slide will become familiar. Everybody's has a Division of Admin Services, and thank God for it. So Director Lager is handling our financial services, our budget management, our human resources, and our procurement. And, you know, I just want to call out, I'm so proud of the team. So when I first started a year ago up on the ninth floor in the state office building, you know, it was sort of like crickets up there. Folks were just coming back from the post-pandemic and figuring out who was still going to be a remote worker, who needed to come back into the office. But you know, it was really easy to see that we had excess floor space, right? And the small business owner and me, you know, there's always that push and pull between the private and the public folks out there, and whether or not we're being good stewards of state dollars. And so I was just so proud of the team, both for how they were able to affect change in a way that really didn't impact morale in a negative way, but, you know, went out and polled the staff about, okay, how much floor space do we really need? And who among our state sister agencies needs space. And so we were really lucky in that the Department of Education was just getting ready to renew their lease, and we talked with them about how much space they needed. And so it's just one of those things. Usually, you know, you're never going to see it represented on a slide, but it's a really great example of, you know, it's been 9 months worth of work, really, just getting new offices, folks out of their offices, new offices stood up and configured differently, transitioning folks. And I go up there and it's just a buzz of activity. We're happily sharing space with another department. The Department of Education has been remarkable. I think there's a lot of synergy that goes along with that, especially because as we're sometimes short in areas, all of a sudden it dawns on us like, oh my gosh, some of the folks in your department are off for the summer now, right? So the educators might be looking for maybe a little bit extra work, and is there a way that they want to join our licensing team temporarily or something? So I just want to call that out because I think that's really remarkable and a great example of how state workers are trying really hard to do the right thing with state dollars. So in terms of our budget, our presentation is going to look a little bit different. This was really for me because, as I've said to you guys before, I'm really a visual learner and it helps me a lot. But so one thing we're trying to do is call out as we go forward in the slides, you're going to see which of the divisions are self-supporting. And I think that that's a really important piece of information for you guys to have. But our total budget is just under $200 million at $197. But of that, it's important to note we're only using $14,500,000 of UGF. The rest is coming from DGF. Federal sources, and that's our total position count at 546 positions. Again, we're doing services or providing services across hundreds of communities in the state, across many divisions, and so this year, FY22, we contributed just over $100 million back to the general fund. So on the next slide, the Division of Banking and Securities team, Director Rob Schmidt and his team do a remarkable job. So they handle the licensing and examination and enforcement for depositories and trusts, securities and investments, mortgage lending, money transmissions, payday lenders, premium finance, and small loan companies. And they deposited $18.5 million to the general fund in FY22. And again, they're self, this is a team that's self-supporting. So money transition, just transmission, just so you guys know, is the fastest growing sector in Alaska's financial service industry. At $7 billion was transmitted to and from within Alaska in 2021. And we anticipate that trend to continue to go to spike upwards. So Rob is great about strategy, looking at the trends and trying to plan accordingly. His focus this year really has been also has been on the enforcement side of things, and we're really proud of the ways that he's been able to protect Alaskans. We've bad players out there that are taking advantage of elderly Alaskans, sometimes by millions of dollars. And so, you know, really having a focused team paying attention to that and looking into and then forwarding up for enforcement to laws is comforting for me. So the next one is our Division of Community and Regional Affairs. So, you know, Sandra's team, they're helping Alaskans communities build sustainable economies, and self-governance is sort of part of what she does. But again, in many ways, I feel like Sandra's division could be a department of its own because of the services that they provide. And I always talk about like the swing of conversations I'm a part of in a day. So whether it's, you know, with Serve Alaska, so those folks are out volunteering in rural communities, HUD, Utility Business Administration, talking about helping folks get trained for running elections in their communities. So all of that is under Sandra's shop. And so the reason why I put this QR code on here, or the staff did without me even having to ask, is because every time I have an opportunity to speak to the communities in Alaska about what we do, I get so excited about this little QR code. And just so you know, I just learned what a QR code was this year, so I'm not trying to be, I'm not techie by any stretch of the imagination, just so you know. Mm-hmm. But it's really great mapping. And so you can pull up her that QR code and look at the maps and the communities across Alaska. You can hit click on something and it'll show you how many grants they're administering and where. It's just a lot of information that I encourage your staff to really take a look at, because in many ways, without having to search the web, Sandra's probably already got it in a really cool visual aid for you guys. And so if I was sitting in your shoes, I think it would sort of be all about how do I find untapped resources to sort of help, because I know the pace at which you guys are running, and this would be one of them. And I encourage you to take a look at those when you can. And just so you know, right now, she's got just over 700 active grants for just under $1 billion. Those are active grants. And one thing, it drives me nuts whenever I hear folks talk about pass-through funding, because never having been a part of this world before, sitting out in the private sector, when I heard pass-through funding, it made me feel like, well, it's basically just money coming in and going right back out, right? Well, then you look at the actual, you know, the paperwork and the process that has to occur anytime we accept money and deploy that out to individuals or businesses out in the community. There's far more that goes along with it than pass through. And so I have tasked the team to come up with something besides pass through, because I can't even say it anymore, because it just doesn't work for me. Our next slide is on our Division of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing. By far, this was, you know, when I took the position, this was the number one thing that I was hearing about from the legislature and from the community members. And so I was absolutely committed along with the governor to make sure that we could make improvements rapidly in this division. The team is a remarkable group of folks, and really it was about empowering the team to tell us where the solutions were. So, you know, invariably the last person that should be making the call on some of these fixes is folks like me at a desk or in a boardroom, when the work is being done out in the field or with folks that understand already where the bottlenecks might be occurring and give us really great advice on how to fix it. So that's that was one of the first things that we did. And then figure out where we could gain efficiencies, where we could, and reduce any sort of redundant processes, but also just sort of taking a beat and going, okay, so what's happened? You know, hindsight's always 20/20. Looking back, I'm sure folks would have said, well, if we had known there was going to be a 64% increase in the number of professional licenses needed over the next 10 years, what do we need to do differently to be prepared for that change, right? And so that's one of the observations I made. Of course, now, unfortunately, we're sort of trying to fix it from the other end, and that's never ideal, but we are making really great improvements. So you guys are just aware, under our professional licensing side, we've got 45 different programs and 21 boards. Under professional licensing, we offer 104 licenses, and there's been an 8.6% increase in FY22 alone. Under our business licensing section, that's 99,554 licenses, and then a 9.2 increase in FY22. Our corporations, we offer 92,000 registered, there are 92,000 registered corporations in the state, and that's a 13.4 increase in FY22 alone. And again, this is another one that is self-supporting. 30% of those licenses under professional licenses are nursing licenses, and I know that that's often a point of conversation. We have it a lot, but it's also, just so you know, one of the reasons why I so strongly support moving forward on the Nurse Licensure Compact. Part of that would, you know, the Nurse Licensure Compact would cause an immediate relief for, it wouldn't take the work from the team, but it would, we would be able to deploy some of the resources we're currently using for nurse licensure to other programs. And I think that that would help. The other thing is, when I spoke with many of you last year, I committed to taking a look at, well, first I should back up and just say, I really appreciate how invested the members of the legislature were in not necessarily placing blame, but just saying, okay, where can we help? We're hearing it from our constituents. We know we can't move the economy forward without an efficient business license process in the state. And so we really looked at the members of the legislature as partners of ours and appreciated the support and the commitment to apply fixes wherever we could quickly, and then also giving us the time to take some of the bigger fixes. One of those will be obviously software related. So you'll see one thing that we're doing is having that sort of piloted through AMCO. And the reason is because, you know, I have horror stories about in healthcare when you have vendors come before you and they promise all things to all people, right? And when you start to ask the really detailed questions about can it do this? Can the system do this? There's a lot of vague answers or assurances. And then sure enough, once you've signed the contract and you go to put it in and you ask about that one thing it was supposed to do, and you're told it can't, that's really disappointing and sometimes really doesn't get you where you need to go. And so I think it's very wise that, and I'm grateful. So AMCO is going to be piloting one of those fixes and hopefully, or software systems, and hopefully if it's that successful, we could have that, have a further reach throughout the divisions. One thing that's not on here is just the number of investigations folks are doing on this team, and that's for, right now, I think we've got over, for the last year, there was over 1,000 investigations into complaints for folks that were professionally licensed. And so I think it's just important to have that as a call out, just knowing how important it is to be protecting Alaskans, but that also takes time and resources from the team. So our next division is our Division of Insurance. And Director Wingheyer and her team are just regulating the insurance industry essentially for the state and protecting Alaskans. She works really hard to find ways to help reduce cost or slow the speed of increases, and I know that that's really been something we hear a lot about from Alaskans. One thing we talk about, and as we should, I mean, I think that her team really provided such exceptional service to Alaskans through the reinsurance program, the 1332 waiver back in 2017, and it was just renewed. But essentially more Alaskans were covered because of it, and reduced the increases, and then also used federal money. So I think that really incredible savings for Alaskans. And then the Department of Insurance deposited nearly $65 million into the general fund in FY22. And nearly $400 million federal funds were collected between 2016 and 2023. On the next slide, that is Director Jim Anderson promoting economic development through direct state lending within industries and within those areas of the state that are not adequately serviced by the private sector. You know, I can't say enough about that, because I think that these funds, when I look at them, well, first of all, I think that this represents the most effective economic development tool that we have, and it's at no cost to the state, and that it's self-sustaining. So the programs pay for themselves. But also, when you look at these loan programs, it's important to recognize that a lot of the folks that are who utilize these services are not folks that would be eligible for traditional lending. And so I look at it as a they graduate from these programs in many cases up to traditional lenders like banks. And so, you know, it's really an incredible program. And when we talk about things like graying of the fleet, Jim's team and his program, I think, are helping combat that in the most effective way that we can. And we're talking about generations of Alaskans, especially in the fishing industry, that are utilizing this program and have benefited from it. On the next slide, we have our corporate agencies. And so all of those services that I just spoke about are what we do under our divisions. But then with that, under DCCED, we have our corporate agencies. So we have the Alaska Energy Authority, we have the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority, Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, Alaska Railroad, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, and the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And so you can see from those handy-dandy tabs which ones are self-supporting. And so on the next slide, so as I sat in the position as a new person to the department and new in the role, I thought about ways in which we could move the economy forward. And as I was meeting with folks, there was a resounding theme over and over. And it dawned on me, as nice as it would be to have things sort of siloed. So when folks are talking about, well, we can't expand commerce in our community because we don't have the workforce, it would have been really nice for me to be able to say, oh, well, that problem or challenge belongs to my, you know, sister agency over here, and I'm going to just give her a call and hand that over. But the reality is, so much of what we do across the departments really interface or tied together, and so the solutions aren't going to come from one department. So we don't call Commissioner Ledbetter and say, what are you going to do about workforce? We recognize if we don't have a healthy workforce, if we don't have housing, if we don't have childcare, we aren't going to be able to effectively move the economy forward for the state of Alaska. So we're actively working with our sister agencies and having conversations, and also really working to make sure that there's communication going across our teams, and trying to make sure that things information doesn't get siloed. Another one that isn't represented, I don't think, on here was the cost of shipping. We hear a lot about that too. So those are consistent messages that we're hearing from stakeholders. So when we talked about the roadblocks in economic growth, right? I kept turning it with the team, trying to figure out, okay, so what do we do, right? So we can't just keep generating reports saying we have this problem and we're not taking any action. And so what I love about working for this governor is his commitment to helping solve the problem, right? So we're open for business. Well, sir, here are the challenges we have in doing that. And then the question is, well, then what are you going to do, or how are we going to fix it, right? So for the first time, this governor has appropriated $5 million to help us with the solution. And so when we go to the next slide, this is a rough sort of a rough thought of how we're going to do this. But for our economic development strategy, what we determined was we're not telling our story well enough, right? So So we've got a lot of really great things going on in Alaska, and responsible resource development is just one of those. When we talk about how we're going to move some of these projects forward, one thing we recognize is we aren't we're not sharing our story even among Alaskans well enough yet in terms of what's that project for, what's it going to do, how's it going to benefit the community, and then also where have we already done really responsible resource development for the state, right? So the other things that we talk about are, yesterday I was meeting with a group from Seward, and we were talking about workforce and about the challenges that developers have in housing. And one of the things that they offered was a development reimbursement program, which I thought was brilliant, and I don't know enough about it. I'll get more information about it from them. But so I'm just bragging a little bit about Seward. But one of the things we want to do is where we are doing things really, really well in the communities, we want to be able to get that information out. We also want to make sure that we are talking about benchmarking information so we know where we are, right? So, and timing is everything. One thing we talk a lot about is post-COVID, folks are really interested in the outdoors. That growth looks like it will continue. So in terms of Alaska, well, that's really great news for us. And how are we taking advantage of that timing? The other thing is, you know, we used to look at remote, when I lived in remote Alaska, we looked at that as like a geographic challenge you're just not going to overcome, right? So when you live in remote Alaska off the road system, your community is not going to be able to like pick up and move. So what I love about the timing post-COVID is it really demonstrated how we can do remote work well and access the communities in a much, different way. So when we look at our plan for our strategy moving forward, the very first thing we know we need to do is get together with a sub-cabinet, which we've already been mobilizing that group. When we talk about incentivizing outside investment, we want to make sure that we're targeted in that. And one of the things that's come to light is when we go to external investors and say, here's what we have to offer in Alaska, here's what we have, here's who we are and what our strengths are, what we want to make sure that we can also do is assure them that our state agencies are working well together. Things like expedited permitting or permitting processes that an outside investor might really need to have assurances of before they would choose to come to our state, right? So moving forward, we will be working to hire a project manager, engage with a PR and marketing firm, have strategic and a focused plan. We're going to be making sure that we're benchmarking the information so that when we come before you again, we can demonstrate where we've made gains. If we haven't made gains, we want to know that too. And then working with, this morning I had an opportunity to meet with the state chamber, but we'll be working with voices like the state chamber and Alaska tourism industry, ASME, folks that really have been doing really great work out in the communities already, many in many areas related to this, and working with them, and then coordinate the business support. So that's our economic development strategy moving forward, and I'm sure we'll be sharing a lot more information with you guys about that. So now I'd love to open it up for questions. What are we doing on time? And we've got some directors online too, so if there's something specific, I'll ask them to chime in. Thank you.
Does anyone have questions for Commissioner Sandy?
I do.
Senator Bishop.
So you've been here a year now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look at you hitting all the beats and you're just rolling off the tongue. And so I'm so happy you're there. I just want to go back to a couple of slides back on your roadblocks to economic growth. And maybe it's just me. Maybe it's not in your wheelhouse, but I think maybe it should. Is the high cost of energy not something that you found was a barrier to economic growth?
It is. We're working closely with Curtis on that. And he's got some projects that over this next year, but that conversation comes up regularly. So if it's not part of here, it absolutely should be, because you're right about that. I mean, you know, folks like in Ketchikan, Southeast Alaska, individuals that, you know, are able to access hydro. Some folks have inexpensive or less expensive energy, but when we talk about the, you know, price of energy, I was shocked coming from Southeast to see that folks on the rail belt are paying more than 20 cents a kilowatt hour. It never even dawned on me, right? So there's lots of innovative solutions that hopefully we'll see over the next few years gain some speed, especially on, we're hearing a lot more on nuclear. But to your point, yeah, absolutely. And if it's not represented on the slide, it should be. The high cost of energy is one of the things that we're focused on.
Curtis and I joined at the hip on that. I just thought it'd be a nice red bullet right here, high cost of energy.
That'll make Curtis very happy.
To me, you crack that code, and all this other stuff will start taking care of itself.
Absolutely.
Okay.
For the record and the folks at home, who is your friend Curtis?
Sorry. Curtis Thayer is the director of the Alaska Energy Authority. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Senator Bishop.
This small business innovation research grants, do we have a timeline when they might start being able to make application and those grants hitting the street? And if you need a lifeline, please.
So the update that I got yesterday related to this, Vice Chair Bishop, was February.
Okay, and the last thing I'd just like to ask is, and I don't need an answer now if you need to noodle on this, is how's your workforce staffing levels and vacancy rate? Because I know that you're put your shoulder to the wheel on the licensing portion, and that's a big one, and I'm here. We're here to help.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, thank you for asking that question. It's, you know, when I first started, it was as easy as just going, okay, well, here's the problem. Once the team sort of shared where things were broken, and it was just as simple as putting the fixes in place and voila. But as you all know, trying to achieve those changes in the absence of a workforce is impossible. So it was always sort of three steps forward, four steps back. But I'm really happy to report now. I mean, we were up as high as 20% vacancy rate at one point. And then, of course, you sort of get in what I think of in small business as a death spiral, because you've got a real morale problem then. You know, folks are working so hard. And I just want to say again, state employees through the pandemic, heroes in my mind. You know, when I understand the hours they were working and what they were trying to achieve for Alaskans, we should feel so proud of those efforts. So thank you to them. But the good news is that we are finally getting close to our budgeted vacancy rate. You know, somewhere between 7% and 10% is what we're budgeted for, and we're getting really close to that. And so I'm crossing my fingers, but I'm really hoping that stabilization is going to be part of what's key, especially as, I mean, we were saying, okay, we've got less bodies to do more work, and by the way, now we're going to ask you to be cross-trained in more things, because we need more of a universal worker when it comes to CBPL, somebody that when we have this priority in front of us today, we don't have enough of these veterinarians or dentist assistants or something. We have to focus all of our team's attention this week on this one thing. We needed the ability to be more nimble. And so I really appreciated folks being willing to come along with us as we solve the problem. And, you know, and just one other thing is, so Sarah Chambers has moved over to, and this is really, you know, to your guys' credit, the folks that I met with in the legislature, I so appreciated. Maybe it was because I was new, but nobody was really pointing their finger saying, you got a real problem, hope you figure it out, lady. You know, I felt like folks were really saying, what do you need from us? How can we help? Both from the governor's office and from you guys. And so one thing that I didn't know enough about was the interplay between boards and commissions, right? So in my mind, it was just this simple little thing. Oh, you've got these boards over here. So we license these different professions, and then we have these boards. But what I didn't understand is we can fix everything under our house, but if we aren't communicating and the board doesn't have that same priority, then those folks are still going to face delays, right? And so that interplay was far more complicated than I thought that it would be, in the same way that there are regulations or statutes that may also change. So it's just sort of trying to move this beast all taking forward motion at the same time, and it just takes coordination and patience. But so I appreciate Director Chamber or Sarah Chambers being willing to take on a new position, which is that liaison between the boards and the commissions, which is really going to help us be in lockstep as we move forward.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you. One final question as we wrap up. Certainly, licensing is a big part of what you do, and I'm looking at your increase in the amount of licensing that your department has had to do. Population of the state remaining fairly flat. What's been the driver of the amount of increased licensing that you guys have had to do?
We've certainly seen a huge increase in the healthcare field. That's been one of the drivers. And you know, that when you think about this, I mean, that's 300,000 licenses that our teams is issuing and on top of, and that's really it's a valiant effort, but at the same time, it's not rocket science in my mind in terms of, okay, listen, we're not the only state seeing this. Others are too. Where are they gaining efficiencies without, I mean, we don't have the opportunity to just add more money to the budget and fix the problem. We don't have, even if you said you guys can have all the money in the world, we're still going to be up against challenges with the workforce, right? And growing state government isn't the right answer. And so the reality is wherever we can maximize efficiencies, follow best practice, we'd like to do that. And certainly the nurse licensure compact, in my opinion, would help with that.
Could it make sense that we increase the renewal period, the amount of time that a license is good for? Could that reduce the workload?
Well, one thing we did right away, which was very helpful, was extend that. And so that gave us some grace period where we were up against windows of time. But that question, perhaps Director Robb would be able to speak to in terms of extending the time frame and whether that would be helpful.
For the record, I'm Sylvan Robb. I'm the director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. As it shows on the slide, Mr. Chair, about half of our professional licenses are governed by boards, and so the ability for the division to make the decision about whether to extend the licensing period is something that would be governed by the board. For the other professional licenses that are not board-driven but that are overseen by the division, it's certainly a good idea and something that we will look at.
Thank you. Any final questions for Commissioner Sandy? Commissioner, thank you for joining Senate Labor and Commerce today.
Thank you.
We look forward to working with both agencies of labor and commerce as we go forward and seek solutions to solve Alaska's workforce challenges. This committee, Senate Labor and Commerce, will meet again next week, Wednesday, the 25th of this month, when we will hear from representatives of the healthcare industry. We're adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.